Triple M Footy lives on Listener. Thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water. Triple M rocks the NRL. Breaking news, the big opinions, last minute goss from inside the locker room. If it's NRL news you need, get it right here. For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
And welcome to your dose of footy on a Saturday afternoon. To welcome in the afternoon, Adam Peacock in for Tony Squires today on the Saturday Scrum. Thanks to the good people at King G Workwear, and I reckon there's a bit of King G being worn around the joint in Sydney Town this morning on the clean-up. Michael Chamis and Wade Graham here in the box at Accor Stadium. How are you, Wade-o? Did you survive the night?
I did, mate. I did. It wasn't too bad down there in the Shire. It was constantly raining. A real heavy patch around maybe 1 to 3 a.m. Woke the kids up, so I got up and just sussed out the house. But it was all secure, all good. And I heard there was a bit more damage over your way.
Yeah. Well, at one stage, I think it was about 4 o'clock, they look out the windows and there were animals walking in pairs down the street. So, no, it just absolutely heaved down for a good 5 hours. Michael Chamis, what about out west, the Golden West?
Oh, I don't know. I was playing FIFA till 1 a.m, so I actually don't know what happened.
What are you, 12?
I played, my brother came over, I won a tournament, best of 21 wow. series over the course of 2 weeks.
Well, the worst thing for me is I like to play my funny games outdoors, and I drove past Cronulla Golf Club and it was underwater, yeah. So it could be a while until we're back out there swinging the golf sticks.
And Ryan Girdler, as always, is with us on a Saturday. But Girds, how
hey,
are
boys.
You, mate?
Ah, yes, 28 degrees and just all sunshine up north today, boys. And Adam, welcome, mate. It's nice to have someone a little bit more age-appropriate to host this program for once in a while.
I don't know where Squires is, actually. They didn't tell me. They just said he can't make it.
Reserve grade.
I'm not sure where he is.
Yeah. He's been on thin ice for a while, a couple of years, actually, so it's good, nice to see someone come in and take over.
He's not sussing out the AFL version of Magic Round, is he? He's down in Adelaide.
I think someone said he's in the States.
Yeah, I think he's watching an ice hockey game today, actually, the Anaheim Ducks.
Okay, that's appropriate to rugby league. It's a very similar kind of outlook on love. You see that ice hockey game the other day where they started and they hadn't even started the game and there's a fight. Straight up punch up.
There's a young lad who just broke a record over in the NHL. He's just like first three starts. He's had 43 minutes off the ice with because he's had that many fouls and he's been ejected every game. It's his first year. It's a new record over there. So they're a bit behind our rules over in NRL with the no fighting and that no more, but it seems like it's only a matter of time over there.
Yeah, we've got a big 3 hours ahead, but there's so much to take in from the three games we've seen so far. We saw that mad game on Thursday night, the two last night, one played in ridiculous conditions and one at the ground we're at today for the Bunnies and Warriors, which in itself could turn out to be anything. Michael Chamis, that was just, and we'll get into greater detail, but I'm still comprehending what went down between the Dogs and Roosters last night.
Yeah, it was incredible, wasn't it? I think there were 5 HIAs, a send-off, a sin bin, some calls that the coaches weren't happy with after the game, and almost an incredible comeback from the Sydney Roosters, down 26-0 at halftime. You thought it was going to be a bloodbath in the second half, down to 11 men, but they were courageous. They got themselves back into that game and almost pulled off one of the great ups, well, not an upset, great comebacks, really. The Dogs, they'll be probably disappointed with what they dished out in the second half, but geez, they did play well over that first half an hour, the Dogs, and held on for a win.
Yeah, good news is later on we'll hear from Kalen Ponga as well, out of the Knights' win over the Dragons. We'll discuss what Shane Flanagan did with Torrell Sloan. Also have a look back on Thursday night. Tyrone Wishart's joining us as well out of Storm Broncos. And Gerds, how many all of a sudden hamstring experts are there in Bronco land, given what happened to Adam Reynolds?
Yeah, everyone's a little bit nervous, and you saw the sort of impact that he had when he went off. You know, they just lacked that little bit of guidance, didn't they, to close that game out when they had a couple of good leads against the Storm. So, yeah, there's some nervous people up in Brisbane. I think, you know, with the gravity of just how important he is to the side, I think, is starting to set in. We saw a little bit of it last year, but yeah, the games that he's missed this year or the parts that he hasn't played, they've really struggled. So all eyes will be on Reno for the week, that's for sure.
Chamis was showing us his replay of his FIFA exploits from, I don't know, 1 o'clock this morning, when the whole city was worried about the roof caving in with rain and you're sitting there playing.
I was worried about my $200 on the line.
So is your brother, does he come to your house?
Yeah, he comes
play
to
there,
my house.
But do you still put the headsets on or you just play next to each other?
No, we just close the door and just hopefully no one hears. The kids don't wake up, and they didn't wake up.
Was there a loud celebration?
Yeah, of course. I ran down the hallway.
Gerds, anything to say here?
I just want to know, who do you play as? What team?
I was Tottenham. He was Man City.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And he's an Arsenal fan. Tottenham beat Man City. Well, I mean, that had never happened. So that's a great effort from you.
Righto, let's get to the footy. Last night, remarkable game played here, the 6 p.m. kickoff on a Friday night. And we had the Dogs beating the Roosters. So Dogs walk away from that. And they go, wow, that's a really good win. However, the way it happened, 5 HIAs, 1 send-off, 1 sin bin, which was questionable. Almost the comeback of the century, 11-13. Where do we start with this, guys? Waiter?
Well, let's start with the footy. I think the Dogs, although they let the Roosters come back and make a game of it, that's the performance they've been searching for, particularly that first half. How impressive they were with the ball, in the conditions, by the way, as well, with the ball. We've been giving them a rap about they're trending in the right direction. They're defending for each other. They're putting in committed performances, but there's been issues around points. No issues last night. No issues at all. Kikau was so damaging on that left-hand edge. He had 2 line breaks within, the first 15 minutes. Matt Burton, a couple of tries. They just attacked the Roosters and found a way through them. And when you put those sort of like passages of play together, when you go and review that and reflect on it, you have confidence. You know you can do it now. They know they can score points when they execute their plays right. And, yes, they will look at the video and the game and go, we slipped in that second half. But there's an actual marker in the ground now. We can find points when we execute our footy.
Wait, it feels like it's just all part of their journey at the moment, doesn't it? Like you look at that game last week against the Rabbits, they couldn't score points. They addressed that. They came out in that first half and blew the Roosters away. And the Roosters, to be fair, just sort of didn't turn up, didn't have the right energy or attitude, and especially with the conditions. You know, their first 4 sets they couldn't complete. They dropped the ball off the kickoff with Dom Young, and then we saw Taff score after about a minute. But I think it was just, you look at some of those key positions for the Bulldogs. I thought Kurt Mann did a really good job, like digging into the line a little bit more this week and allowing the halves to play with a little bit more width and getting the ball out to the left edge. But they just haven't had a lot of guys in those key positions that have experienced that. Like, not many people get to go off at halftime against one of the, leading contenders for the premiership, 26 points in the good, in ridiculous conditions. They're probably all sitting there thinking, well, what do we do now? And they're only coming out against 12 men. So, I think they learned some valuable lessons last night. They got away with the 2 points. I thought they were the better side. But I just think they just kind of, they lost their way, didn't really have anyone with the experience to close that game out when they needed to. But they found that try in the second half. I think it ended up 5 tries each. So the Roosters made a real fist of it, but the Dogs found that one try in the second half that allowed them to get away and get the job done. And all in all, I think they'd be happy with that.
Before we get to Chammy and the news out of the game, there's plenty of news with injuries and suspensions and the like. Let's hear from Trent Robinson about 2 of the big issues in the game from his point of view, the send-off to Dom Young, and then late on when they were making that stirring comeback, Victor Radley copping a sin bin for a hip drop.
Hit high and it's not good for Blake, obviously. You don't want to see that. And it hit him in the jaw, but it wasn't a swinging arm, was open-handed, was lower than shoulder height. If that's the standard, that's fine, but that's a new one for me. I feel like that's lower than what's been sent off before. It just feels like, we can set a new standard here again. That's how it feels. I've had guys stay on the field, not even go for 10 for less, and I feel like that was a bit over the top. If they come out and say, "Radio, that's the new," there'll be a lot more send-offs in our game. There should be, if that's the case. And then Rads is one. Rads was ridiculous. Connor's the one that tackles him from behind and twists his ankle, and then he falls on that ankle. How they got that to that decision, that's incredible. That was below par.
Very hard to disagree about the hip drop. Trying to watch the replay and find a reason how Victor Radley copped it, but the send-off, guys, firstly to you, Chammy, what's he copped? Dom Young, what's he been offered?
Well, Dom Young's copped a grade 3 charge today. He'll face 2 to 3 weeks on the sidelines, depending on if he fights or not. I think the Roosters will accept. They'll take the 2-game ban and he'll miss the next couple of weeks. The hip drop, though, Victor Radley wasn't even charged by the match review committee. The charges have come out and he's not on the team, on the sheet. Oh, it's a pretty crucial moment in the game to send him to the sin bin for something that didn't look like a traditional hip drop. I think Trent Robinson is within his rights to be disappointed with that. I don't think the send-off was that bad of a call, though. I think if we're arguing whether it should be a sin bin or a send-off and they've gone the other way, that's okay. I'll cop that. If we're arguing that it shouldn't have even been a penalty with certain instances and we get players sent to the sin bin, that's where I get pretty upset with some of the calls. That's not a howler. I think that's, I agree with you.
I disagree with Trent Robinson in the first instance, but completely agree with the Victor Adley style. I think Dom Young hits him flush and on the chin. And to say it wasn't swinging, I say lucky probably not to be swinging. And Taff was out before he hit the ground. So I'm happy with that to be a send-off. And I don't think the NRL's missed too many of those, to be honest, over the last few years. If you come up hard out and in from an outside player and hit someone flush on the chin and knock him out before he hits the ground, I think that's a send-off. I'm happy with that. But the Victor Adley one, that was there was no chance that was a hit
that
drop.
Was that flat out weird.
That was just a he tripped over his own player trying to effect the tackle, awkwardly landed on Crichton, and the referee's got that one wrong.
So who was fine. He got up and he was running.
He got up and he's fine. But players now, they know any sort of contact on that lower ankle, that you see him all the time reach down just to massage it and check that it's right, just to bring it to the attention of the referee.
Yeah, but exactly.
Atkins got to be better in that situation.
Yeah, I totally agree, Wade. And they spoke to Crichton in the presser at the end, and he said, look, I didn't know what happened. I just felt some weight was there, and I gave it a rub just to make sure it was okay. So, yeah, you're exactly right. The players now are just, anytime there's any sort of pressure in those areas, are staying down, making sure there's time enough to have a look. And, you know, the Roosters were coming at that point, weren't they? They're, I don't know, what were there, 8 or 9 minutes to go? And they'd scored sort of 4 tries or 5 tries in the second half, and they were just on the verge of completing what was just going to be an unbelievable turnaround. But, that played a major part in the halting of any sort of progress they had at that point, the Roosters.
So how as a game do we stop that? Because with the concussions, and we saw yesterday, if a player stays down after copping a hit to the head, then they can get called from the field. And it happened with Joseph Suaalii yesterday. He came from the field after that tackle from Sam Hughes, who was charged for that, by the way. He'll be fined for that incident. He comes from the field for 15 minutes because the NRL's called him off. He's the goal kicker of the team. In that period, they scored 2 tries. Luke Keary misses 2 goals, and that's the difference in the end in the result. So we can, as a game, get involved with concussions and pull players off. But do we get to a point now if a player stays down with a leg injury, similar to soccer, and we stop the game, he has to come off as well? Is that where we're heading?
Yeah, well, I think a few years ago they solved it with the high tackle issue. Remember after the Blake Ferguson incident in the prelim up in Darwin that year? If the referee didn't see it and didn't rule on it on the field and the player laid down, they just say, get up and get on with it. Mm. And then as soon as they do that and they make the right decision, players will stop doing it. They just need to tell.
But it's not for the ref to be the doctor in that situation. What if he's seriously hurt?
They need to stop showing the replay. Yeah, they need to show play on the replay. Sorry, why don't you go?
No, you go.
Yeah, but they do it on the big screen, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's everyone at the ground sees it, everyone reacts, the referees, the players, they all get to see it. There was a couple of games earlier on the year where, I'm not sure why, but they didn't play show replays at the ground on that, and they just set it up in the bunker. And if the bunker was then able to make a call, regardless of, you know, the whole ground and the players and the referee having a second or third look at it, I think if they take that part of it away, so if there's an incident like that and the bunker want to have a look at it, that's okay.
Yeah.
But don't replay it on the big screen. Just keep the shot on the player, and then the players will, I think, eventually just start getting back on with it. They won't hang around and wait for the replay.
Well, because that's what they do, Wado, in football, in big games. They don't show any replays kind of foul play on the big screen to get everyone worked up in the stadium.
Well, and there's no doubt the referees feel pressure from the crowd when they hear all the boos when the replays are played. I just think if it's in the act of foul play, for sure, there's a penalty warranted if a player gets hurt and he has to stay down and get attention. But if it's not, fine, take your time. And if you're okay, just move to the side and play the ball. Because the Stephen Crichton one, even if he was to be hurt in that instant, it would have just been an accident. It wasn't a hip.
Totally.
It was just a weird collision. And unfortunately in our game, I speak about it all the time with the head clashes, and that accidents are going to happen. There's guys moving at high speeds in multiple directions, multiple players affecting a tackle.
Yeah.
So if someone is injured, right, take your time to get up and play the ball. But if it's not in foul play, it's play on.
But it's difficult in that moment. Like, look at Tedesco, right? He was knocked out by Viliami Kikau, and the Roosters were blowing up on the sideline for time to be called off. You could see he was in a bad way, Tedesco, pretty quick. And Grant Atkins is trying to look at the game, he's trying to work out what's going on. And they played on. They played on. They didn't get time.
But only one play, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was only one play, but they could have gone and scored.
They got
there
to the fifth right under the post, and then they had to hold it when they had of momentum.
Yeah,
so.
Like, you're talking about instances that there might be an injury. Like, he just got up and rubbed his ankle. Like, when there's an incident like Tedesco, yeah. he had the stiff arms and was knocked out.
He's before gone. Yeah.
Like, as he made the tackle. That's obvious for everyone.
But he didn't call it.
Yeah, but it's obvious for the touchy who's right there on the sideline. Yeah. It's obvious for the bunker. It's obvious for the man in the middle. That one is just, if he's in a serious condition, if anyone is in a serious condition, the game stops.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, just with this injury list out of last night, so Tedesco, he'll have 11 days off with a concussion. Sam Walker, it's not listed as 11 days yet. They have to work out.
He won't play. I've spoken to the Roosters today, especially after he copped a head knock a couple of weeks ago. He won't play this week.
Black Taff, same thing, 11 days. Kickow, knee, how bad? We're not sure. Wait and see with that one. Kurt Mann, fractured left hand. Connor Tracy, torn left calf. Max King, he's got a fracture as well. That's massive for the Dogs if Max King goes down. Reading here, we'll get to the Dragons Knights game. A really serious one. Touchy did a calf last night in that Dragons Knights game. So, it's horrible news.
Well, it's disappointing for the Bulldogs with all those injuries they've got. Kurt Mann, from my understanding, they hope he'll be back after the bye. They have 2 weeks, then the bye. Same with Connor Tracy. They're hoping the calf injury, he'll be 2 weeks after the bye, he'll come back. Max King's going for scans today. And for the Roosters, well, they're decimated in the outside backs. They've already got Billy Smith out sideline for a long period of time. The young gun, Rob Toyer, he's unavailable. From what I understand, Junior Ponga will come in on the wing. And Michael Jennings, who made his return to rugby league yesterday, will play his 300th game in the centre. So it'll be interesting to see what the Roosters do with the rest of their side.
Quick one, Wado. Dogs, when they rock up for video on Monday morning or whenever they do it, is it happy Cameron Serrato who points out the good things, or is it annoyed Cameron Serrato about the standards that dropped in the
sand? I think he's happy because there's a mark in the sand now for their attack, and they've shown in glimpses and good passages of play throughout the start of this season already their defensive grit, and now there's evidence, right? The video never lies. They can look at it and go back to it and reflect on it. Now it's just trying to make the good bits go longer and the not-so-good bits get shorter in the game.
Michael Chamis here sitting in his King G workwear after a heavy morning in the garden, after a big night playing FIFA. We've got Ryan Girdler here as well and Wade Graham.
Jamie doesn't have gardens, Adam. He's concreted the whole lot. It's just there's no mowing the lawn. There's no pulling weeds.
That's a stereotype. You've ever heard one.
Yeah, I didn't want to go down that path, but if you're happy to, Gerds, you go for it, mate.
I've been to his house. I know. He's FIFA and doesn't have to worry about the gardens. It makes sense, right?
Fair enough. Beautiful day in Sydney. Sorry, Wade.
Okay. So I just had that flashpoint when Gerd used to do our house. That was one of my favourite segments as a kid. It was awesome, man. The one where you did with Freddie, that was brilliant.
Open the broom cupboard and you walk into the IMAX theatre.
Down the stairwell.
Can you do an Our House just for Triple M for Jimmy's house, please?
Whose house? Chamis's house.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Beautiful day in Sydney, unlike the last 24 hours where it just hosed down for 24 hours straight. And somehow the races are on at Randwick today, and we've got a really good track here at Core Stadium for the Bunnies and the Warriors, which is set up nicely. It's a hard one to call, but we'll go back to when the weather was biblical, Ryan Girdler, last night in Newcastle. And what did you take out of Newcastle Dragons? Was it simply a case of one team adjusted accordingly to the conditions and one team didn't get the hang of it, or something else?
Yeah, no, I think that was probably, the storyline there, Adam. Like, you know, it's really tough. It was really tough conditions. And I thought the fact that they went into that game, the Knights, with Cogger and Hastings, even though it probably wasn't on purpose, I think those two halves, you know, taking that side into a game with had to deal with those conditions really worked in the favour of the Knights. Good kickers of the football, keep things nice and simple. Hastings is, you know, likes to direct the team around, and it was never going to be an expansive contest, so they weren't going to sort of have to rip down edges. Never really got to see Jackson Hastings, though, like sort of change parts of his game, which I think is what they want him to do up there, maybe dipping into the line just a little bit further and sort of playing out the back and shifting the ball. But, yeah, I think it just suited them, the fact that those two guys went in, and then it was all about the middles, and I just thought the middle of the Newcastle Knights, especially the starting front rows, Thompson and Saifidi, were exceptional last night. I think you got to try Saifidi as well. But, yeah, I think they were just too good in those areas of the field where you need to be when the conditions are like that. Their kicking game was far superior, and they just, you know, they worked a little bit harder. They're up there. There was 10,000 crazy fans to cheer them on, so it was a good night for the Newcastle Knights, and they reveled in those conditions. And the Dragons just, yeah, they had some nice moments, and they scored a few really nice tries, but were never consistently in the contest for long enough periods to trouble the Knights.
A reminder, we'll hear from Kalyn Ponga a little later on the Saturday scrum. But, Wado, your take on especially Jackson Hastings. Adam O'Brien made the point after the game that he really impressed him the way he handled his demotion and how he trained and how he applied himself. And then he scores that first try and gives the big shush when he does as well. Expect nothing less of Jackson.
Yeah, it was a good reward for him. And, just sort of echoing Gerds' comments, those games in those types of conditions are really just about, you know, patience, not getting frustrated when things don't go according to plan, because your footy is going to be clunky and there's going to be ricochets, and it's just your game plan. You never really have an opportunity to prepare for those sort of games, because you wouldn't train in those conditions at all, because you're worried about just getting your prep right when there is good conditions. And you're used to wet weather footy, but that's something extreme what they played
You could only maybe train in a car wash to get used to something like that.
That's the extreme. And I've played in a few games like that, and you get out there and it's hard not to laugh sometimes about what's going on, because it's just so bizarre in those conditions. But Cogger and Hastings just kicked well. And what the Knights did, despite having things go against them, they defended well. They defended well. And we're going to get onto the Dragons and Sloan being moved to the wing because of the defensive issues, but that's what those games are about, being patient, not getting frustrated with your footy, just keep putting in the good positions, working hard and defending well.
Yeah, let's now hear from Shane Flanagan, Dragons coach, about why he moved Sloan from where he was at fullback mid-game.
He's a young kid and he needs to learn that it's a tough game and you need to put your head where people are going to put their boots and there's going to be collision, and it didn't happen in the first three tries, so then I need to make a change. And I'm not afraid to do those type of things. As I say, I need to make change at this club. That's my job, and I'm going to make change.
Big call. Big call. Jamie, get to your take on the Zach Lomax thing in a moment, but for the ex-footy players here, to publicly question a player putting their body on the line is about as harsh as you can get in a public domain, I'd imagine, for a footy player, from a coach. How does Sloan take that on board?
I think it's just... you know, it's probably a measured comment from Flano, to be honest. He's probably had these discussions with him behind closed doors. And I think Tyrell Sloan's been outstanding to start this season. He's been playing great footy, and I think he's responded to some of the coaching from Flano. But he obviously has most likely addressed, he wouldn't just fire that shot publicly for the first time if he hasn't spoken to him about it previously. And again, in those types of conditions, you know, sometimes it is hard to commit your body into those defensive positions, because you know it's wet, you know it's going to hurt a little bit more, you know it's
a teddy on kick out.
Yeah, it's a bit sore, but and I'm guessing there would have been a message down to him on the field after probably the first try. We need more from you there. After the second try, we need more from you there. And because he hasn't seen a response, he's made the decision. And yes, it is hard sometimes to publicly get that criticism, but it is a part of our game. But I don't have any doubt that there'll be discussions this week about his game. And I'd be surprised if he moved him this week. I think you'd back him to go at fullback and respond from that criticism.
Yep.
But it is a line in the sand, and Shane Flanagan's, you know, made it quite public or quite clear what his expectation is.
Now, Wade's right. This is not the first time that he would have heard from Flanagan about it. Flanagan was concerned about his toughness from the day he arrived. And he said that to Tyrell Sloan, and he said that to people publicly, that the criticism of him was whether or not he had the toughness to make the fullback position his own. And last night, that was a concern that was raised. And I think he's improved his defensive efforts over the first month of the season. But the fact that he's looking at someone like Sunia Taruva, exploring the options of whether or not he can be a fullback, he's not sold on Tyrell Sloan. It's his jersey right now. And I think the thing with Tyrell is he wants to try and coach him through this period. And that was the criticism under Anthony Griffin, that when he dropped Tyrell Sloan, he dropped him without any reasoning, without any help, and trying to get him out of it and trying to improve him as a player, and that's his job. And I think, Gerds, that's what Shane Flanagan is trying to do here, right? He's trying to get his fullback to play the style of football that he needs him to play.
And it's not necessarily a courageous thing. Sometimes players like that always look for the brilliance in a situation. And if he sees a ball on the ground like that, like, he's more likely to try and pick it up and get 10 metres for his team than necessarily dive on it. So it's also just understanding, you know, what the team needs at that time. And sometimes that is just the simple play and not the flashy play, because you see the way that he plays and he's so naturally gifted that everything sort of seems to come really easy for him. So sometimes when he finds himself in those situations, he just wants to come up with the brilliant play, because that's the way that he generally attacks every situation. And sometimes that's just not in the best interest of the team. And I think that's the point that that I took out of Flano's comments and the way that he said it, because Flano wouldn't have made those comments in public if he didn't think that Sloan could make those plays. He wouldn't have embarrassed him like that. So I think it's just a really strong message, as Wado said, to the young fellows, like, you know, you need to know basically the old, you know, what is it? You need to know when to hold them and when to fold them. And you know, last night he just took a couple of wrong options.
Yeah, I agree, Gerge. And I think the good thing for Tyrone is, like, we're not searching for more skill from him, or we're not searching for more athletic or talent from him, because he's got all those skills. It's basically just decision-making and attitude, totally. Really. So that's all in his favour. He's got the skills. He's got the skill set to be a success in this competition. It's just around sharpening up that decision-making come game day.
Righto, Chammy's got all the mail on Zach Lomax. He's been covering this like you wouldn't believe.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Back to last night, and, one player who came up with potentially the play of the game, even though he played in the losing side, Zach Lomax, that ridiculous flick pass back inside for Penny Hunt for a Dragons try. It was outrageous in the conditions. But Michael Chammas, in a wider sense, now you've been covering this like you wouldn't believe. Wade doesn't want to talk about it too much. Because he's sick of talking about it. I don't know how Gerds feels about it, but what's the latest? Where does it sit right now with Zach Lomax and meeting Parra and leaving the Dragons and all that?
Well, we had dinner at Brad Arthur's house on Wednesday night. I've been to Brad Arthur's house, actually, speaking of houses. He didn't make me any lamb casserole or whatever he made Zach Lomax, but...
I'd be impressed if you know what the dish was.
He wouldn't, Michael, you would know what they had for dinner, surely.
I think he said meat and veg they had.
There you go.
Michelle, his wife, lovely woman.
His telescope wasn't that big.
Dinner.
Are you for other things, Gerds?
yes, correct. No comment. He went over with his manager and had dinner with Brad Arthur, the Eels. They want to make this happen. They want to make it happen fast. And... out of respect for Zach Lomax, they didn't want to say too much before he played, but I imagine in the next 24, 48 hours, there'll be an offer put forward for Zach Lomax to join the club from next season. From my understanding, probably worth around $650,000 to $700,000. 3 to 4 years, obviously, there's a negotiation to take place, but roughly up to $700,000 over a 3 or 4 year period. He gave up, he's on 800 at the Dragons right now, and he gave up the final 2 years of his deal. From my understanding, he's on 850 next year, 875 the year after. It's a fair whack to give up, and thankfully he got through last night unscathed and doesn't risk potentially not getting a contract. So the Eels will put forward that deal. So I imagine he'll accept the deal if there isn't anything else elsewhere. And from what I gather, there's nothing else from the Roosters or Melbourne.
Jamie, can I just ask you one thing? The Dragons are moving this guy on because of, salary cap and they want to free up some room. How does a guy like that on 800 or 700 grand go to a side like the Eels with Brown, Moses, Gutherson, Campbell-Gillard, Borlo, Lane, Madison? Like, if I look at both those salary caps, it's like, well, if anyone should be freeing up some room in the cap, it should be someone going from Parramatta to the Dragons. It shouldn't be the other way around.
Yeah, definitely. I think between Moses, Gutherson and Junior Borlo, you nearly have $3 million. If not a little bit more in the salary
Madison's
cap.
Madison's off contract, isn't he?
I think Madison still has year, maybe. So look, there are a lot of big-name players on big money at Parramatta.
Yeah.
But they still have, from what I gather, around $500,000 in the cap for this year. Like, they could afford Lomax at full freight for the rest of this year. So he's already been paid quite a bit.
They could take him now.
Half his salary by the Dragons. They could take him now.
Yeah.
The Dragons won't let him go now, though, unless they get something in return. And I asked Shane Flanagan, what do you want in return? And he said... give me Gutherson, Mitchell Moses or Junior Borlo, which is not happening. So unless there's some sort of deal in the background they can get somebody, it's not going to happen this year. They will push. I can guarantee you that when he signs his deal at the Eels, or if he signs his deal at the Eels, the next conversation will be, how do we get you now?
Does he have to sign that next week to kind of take away the risk factor for his own personal benefit? You know, if he goes and plays soon without... everything locked in for 2025. It's a bit of a risk, isn't it?
Oh, of course. If he, I want to knock on wood. If he does his ACL and hasn't got a contract in place, you'd be mortified with the outcome of that. And I wouldn't blame Parramatta for then reducing their offer or pulling out, because it's a long road back from an ACL. Now, that's hopefully, I think a deal will get done in the next week, though. He plays, I'm not sure when they play next week, the Dragons, but I imagine that'll get done. They'll make him the offer early this week or over the weekend.
But his contract's still valid at the Dragons at the moment.
For 24, yes.
Yeah, what? It's so they've actually...
It's been terminated. Lodged with the NRL.
That section with
they've
the
mutually
NRL.
Agreed to terminate his contract in 2025 and 2026, yes.
Seems a crazy way of doing it, doesn't it, Wade?
Well, it's a risk every game you play, but I'd be... If Shemus is talking about the deal being done, it's on the table. I would have expected it to be done but almost a month ago by how the talk has been, that they would know in the background that if the request, the release request was granted by the Dragons, well... His management would have had those early talks sorted already. Otherwise, they wouldn't be requesting a release.
Gertz, how does it go down with his current teammates at the Dragons when he rocks in? And he goes, "Oh, how was Brad Arthur's lamb casserole and all of that?" Does it become a joke, or does it become something more sinister?
It just depends on the personality, Adam. I think, you know, and some guys will have a little bit of fun with it. I'm not sure. I don't know Zach personally, but apparently he's a little bit of a different character. So I'm not sure whether you play around with those sorts of guys or if they're playing well, you know, you're getting the best out of them on a weekly basis. His attitude's apparently really good at training. You just let him go about his business and you're happy with that. I don't think there's too much more to it, to be honest.
I think that playing group would be exactly like, sick of talking about it, sick of worrying about it, sick of the noise in the background. They'd actually be happy for him to get his future sorted so he can just focus on the back end of this year and playing well for the club. And he was one of their best again last night and losing sight. I know there was probably that one defensive read where he came in, but scored a try, set up another try with that flick pass, ran for over 200 metres. Like, for someone who doesn't want to play on the wing, he's doing a fair job of it.
He's doing a great job of it.
Well, the interesting part about all this now is the noise around the Dragons 6 months ago was that Ben Hunt wanted out the door.
He was asked about it last night after the game.
Was he?
Yeah. Well, said, I'm here and I want to stay here.
Well, that's what I reported 25. On Friday night, that he's spoken to the Dragons. They've opened conversations about an extension. He's contracted for 2025. They've now opened conversations about him playing on in 2026 when he turns 36 years of age. So it's quite a dramatic turnaround with Ben Hunt. He's obviously happy under Shane Flanagan. Now, they haven't opened negotiations, but I imagine in the coming weeks to months that they'll begin putting a deal together to keep him there and finish his career at the Dragons.
It could be like Buddy Gordon, who's out here playing New South Wales Cup for South at the age of 40 or something, Wado. You couldn't believe that when
I played with Buddy when I was out at Penrith. So that was, over 13 years ago, 14 years ago, and he was playing on the wing. He's moved to the front row. But
he's a big bustling
good on him. The love of the game. He's still out here playing. That's a long career.
Welcome to Tony's Spotting Quiz.
Was that Tony on the trombone playing his own intro music?
Let me tell you this, Adam. No one would have complained if this little segment would have gone to America with Tony. But anyway, continue on.
Hey, I'm just following instructions here, Gerds. I've got the rundown in front of me and it says, right now, just before the 1 o'clock news, we're doing Tony's quiz. Okay. Here we go.
There's
a rundown for the show, is there? Oh, that's
good. Yeah, there is a rundown. It's in my hand. Wow.
Do we have American themed buzzers tribute to Tony?
Okay. What do you want to throw?
I'm going to go quack because he's
watching. Oh, yeah. I like it.
Quack? Yeah.
Quack, yeah.
Cammy, you got something?
And I go LeBron.
LeBron? Yeah. Yep.
LeBron.
And Gerds?
Well, I'm skipper.
Oh, he's always skipper, yeah.
He's always skipper. Yeah.
That's just him.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's the name of Tony's dog that died 2 years ago. So just in remembrance to Skipper, the Smooth Silky. I think, was it a smooth Silky? Something like that.
Yeah.
Hairless Silky, maybe.
So Quack, LeBron, and Skipper. Here we go. Gents, chime in whenever you want. Mid-question, at the end of the question, bit of thinking time. And question one is, which Manly legend is Daly Cherry-Evans?
Cliffy Lyons.
Oh, wow.
You. Quack.
Bonus point for how many Cliffy played?
308.
No, 309.
Minus one.
Back to zero, yes. Quack man. Unlucky. Unlucky. It's a fair old effort from DCE this afternoon at Four Pines Park, taking on Penrith. All the best with that. Dom Young was the first player sent off this NRL season. How many were sent off in 2023?
Quack. 500.
Oh. What is it?
That's what it felt like. No, I'm going to say four.
You need to see a quack.
I'm going
to
say four.
You'll say yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
Name him? Can you name him?
No.
No.
I'm not doing any more bonus points. Your scoring system doesn't feel like I'm justifying guessing.
You got the one? You want to stay at one?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Mo Fotowaka, Nathan Brown, Jacob Saifidi, Seb Chris were the players sent off last year. Question three. The AFL this weekend is holding their magic round equivalent. Yes, Skipper?
Adelaide.
Correct. Adelaide. on the board. Ryan Gurley. They want to actually, there was word coming out they want to have three of them per year. I mean, unlike the AFL, to try and bleed something dry. There's no rumours that there's going to be more than one magic round in rugby league.
We should do one here and one in New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand would be good.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I like that, Goods.
Yeah, and people would travel too. A lot of people would travel just for the Nines tournaments back in the day over there in Auckland, and I think Aussies would travel for sure over to New Zealand.
We've got one in Vegas now. That feels like a magic round, the way it's pumped up. And there's only two games, maybe three with the NRLW as well next year. But anyway, speaking of Adelaide, after the gather round question, what was the name of the rugby
league? I mean, LeBron.
Gibber.
the guy who forgot who his buzzer was.
Rams.
Adelaide Rams.
Yes.
Correct. Correct. Ever play against the Rams, Gertz?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
How was it down there Adelaide playing rugby league? Yeah.
There was probably about maybe 400 or 500 people there. It was good. Great atmosphere. Great pitch.
Terrific. Question five. So we're all on the board now. This is great. Who was captain of the Adelaide Rams?
Chamis. LeBron.
Quack.
Skipper.
Did you get your name right?
Sorry, I don't really go around calling myself LeBron.
Well you wanted to.
Yeah, I will.
Righto. You get the answer.
I don't even know. Actually, no, this is a bad answer. Skipper. I don't think he played for the Adelaide Rams.
Quack. I said quack.
Kerrod Walters.
Hey, no, I said it. Get the replay, mate. I was after Chemist. Quack first.
You've lost control of this, Adam.
Yeah, you have, actually.
I'm fine with that because you can both have a point because I'm in giving mood. Both of you.
Yes.
A point.
Kerrod Walters. Back.
There you go. Name your most, this isn't a question. Name your most random Adelaide Rams player.
Quack.
Yeah?
Kerrod Walters.
You dickhead.
Whoa.
Am I allowed to say that? How far can I go with those words?
No,
that's about it.
Hey, Latrell got in trouble for that.
Yeah, true.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't. It was F-bomb central. Anyway, we'll leave that in the past. There is one current NRL player who's born in Adelaide. Who is that player?
Ooh. That's a good question.
Okay, I'll narrow it down. He's playing today.
Ooh.
Three games today.
How about you narrow it down?
I'll narrow it down. He's playing in the area where Ryan Gurdler hated playing. He hated the team, but he set up businesses there and bled the community dry on the Northern Beaches. That's where he's playing the game he's playing.
Okay.
You didn't bleed it dry, though.
Adelaide. You
kind of came up with three really good coffee shops.
Four, actually.
Sorry.
Anyway, good to see you paying attention.
I got it. LeBron. Is it Josh Alloyer?
No, it's not. Nothing.
Time out.
Brad Schneider from the Penrith Panthers, born in Adelaide, raised in Townsville.
There you go.
Wow. There you
go. That's a useless fact that Woods would know.
Yeah, okay. We're getting onto the stadium.
I looked over your shoulder. I swear it said Josh Alloyer on the team sheet.
Oh, here we go. That's minus a point.
Guess what? It didn't. So you lose another point for trying to cheat.
Okay.
A core stadium, fact or fiction. Here we go. Harry Kuehl scored the winning penalty to send Australia.
Skip LeBron.
LeBron?
False.
No. I got in there.
There's a delay.
I'm not playing.
There's a delay.
There must be a delay.
Hands on heads.
Oh, well, he's into his coconut milk, so there you go.
No, he didn't. He didn't score it. It's false.
Yeah, it's false. You both get a point.
Aloisi.
John Aloisi.
He's false.
Oh, you get a point too.
Thank you.
There you go. Everyone gets a point. This is like Oprah being the audience. You get a card.
You have lost control of this.
Oh, shut up. Johnny Wilkinson scored the match-winning field goal in the 2003 Rugby World Cup final.
You don't score a field goal. You kick a field goal.
Oh, whatever. Okay.
Okay.
That's good, Gerds.
Did you quack?
Yeah, quack. False. Yeah.
Huh, it's fact.
There you go.
On this very ground.
On this very ground. In conditions like last night. Rapper Eminem played the first ever concert at a core stadium.
Quack.
Skipper.
False. Is that
correct.
Allianz?
No. It's you're correct.
I did. I performed here on this very ground for the 2000 Paralympics opening ceremony.
Well, unfortunately,
what did you do?
I was like the Nikki Webster of the Paralympics.
You were not.
I was performing here.
What? You got up and sung Strawberry Kisses in front of...
Well, I didn't sing, but I was like running around as one of those kids on the opening ceremony. So that's my claim to fame.
Can we get some footage of this, please?
Yes. One of how many?
One of... Oh, there were about 1,000.
Is that about 1,000 there?
I tell everyone I'm the Nikki Webster of the Paralympics.
Yeah, well, once again, you've embellished the truth and you've made a living of it. Congratulations. The Bee Gees were actually...
What?
Not Eminem. 27th of March, 1999, a crowd of 66,000. There you go. And the great final show. Question. This is closest to the pin, guys. I don't know, nor do I care who is winning. The 1999 NRL Grand Final between the Storm and Dragons, played here at this stadium, holds the record for the biggest attendance at a rugby league game in Australia. Calm down. What was the crowd figure LeBron. That day? Everyone have LeBron. A guess.
108,426.
Well, I'm going to say 98,552.
No, they had the ends up. So I'm going to say like 106,050.
Chammy's closest.
Yeah, he's looking over his shoulder, mate.
I was here that day. I cried on the way out.
What did you count on or something, did you, Chammy's?
I was counting that. I was disappointed. I was up there. See where that bunny is in the top of the grandstand?
Why did you cry?
Because I'm a dragon.
Your team got beat.
That's one of the great rorts of all time. How was that a penalty try?
It's a 100% penalty try. Nearly knocked his head off. But Michael Chammas here from the Sydney Morning Herald. Just a bit of an update. Injury-wise, there's a long list of players unavailable next week and also possible charge sheets as well.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend, unfortunately. Started on Thursday night, Adam Reynolds with that hamstring injury, came from the field, was quite emotional. And having spoken to Brisbane today, look, he's highly unlikely to play next week, but they're confident he might be able to play against the Raiders the following Saturday. So it might not be as bad. They think at worst 2 weeks. So that's massive for the Brisbane Broncos with Adam Reynolds, where it looked at one point we were starting to fear whether he's, you know, he would be out for an extended period. Dean Mariner, they're talking 2 to 4 weeks with a back fracture for the Broncos. So it'll be a bit of a touch and go for Reece Walsh, boys. Apparently he's a chance of playing this week. So that's a huge in with Payne Haas still out for another 4 to 6.
That's quite the effort from Mariner because he received it when Coates went up above him. And I thought it was a hip pointer watching in Carrot, but to hear he had a fracture in his back and continued to play because he was in pain.
Yeah.
You could see it was really uncomfortable, but
flight home would have been fun.
Oh, that's quite the effort.
Yuck.
Last night there were quite a few injuries and concussions and suspensions. We mentioned earlier Victor Adley not charged for that incident there, the alleged hip drop tackle that saw him sent for the sin bin yesterday. Unfortunately for the Roosters, though, they will be without Dom Young for 2 weeks at a minimum, 3 weeks if he fights and loses. I think they'll accept that. Sam Hughes for the Bulldogs, he was charged with dangerous contact for that back slam that landed Joseph Swali'i in a bad position. But the Dogs, they have a number of injuries. Kurt Mann, fractured left hand, we're talking 3 weeks. Connor Tracy, left calf. He's torn that. He's looking like 3 weeks as well. Blake Taff, concussion. He won't play. They've got, obviously, a concern there. As I mentioned, Connor Tracy not playing. So that means I think Stephen Crichton will wear the number one for them, given he filled in yesterday. So to see how Stephen Crichton goes. Max King as well. Possible fracture
of
the arm.
Yeah. Easy one for them. They got the Storm in Melbourne next week. So, big win for them. Gets them going in the right direction.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
So Adam Reynolds, that is the big talking point because going forward, Dolphins next week, they won't be with him. Who they put in remains to be seen. But because the importance of Reynolds was shown in two ways. The incident where he injured himself, I reckon, he played that beautiful little ball off his hip that put a player in a gap. And then early in the second half, they had this chaotic set of six on Melbourne's line and they just went without direction for six tackles. They were all over the shop. So how do they fix that, the Bronx, without Adam Reynolds for however long he's out?
There's always that adjustment period when you lose key personnel like during the game. So, you know, the fact that it took them a couple of sets there to readjust makes total sense. But I think anyone that watched the game against the Cowboys, the Broncos played last week, just saw how well Adam Reynolds, some parts of his game is playing and especially finishing off the set. So the Broncos can keep it nice and simple when they know that they've got a guy like that that's going to, you know, put the ball exactly where it needs to go, try assist, put it in the corner, repeat set, whatever it may be, he gets that done. So he's a big loss. And with a soft tissue injury like a hamstring, unfortunately, at the back end of your career, Wado, you know, we all went through it. You get little injuries like that, they turn into bigger injuries, they need to be managed, and it's sometimes something you basically need to carry through the whole season.
Yeah, well, with Adam, there was a lot of emotion that was coming out of him, and at first, you know, Michael mentioned it before the break, but we all feared a long-term injury because of the emotion coming out of him, but looking back with the hammy, it's just pure frustration, I think, with him. Another like, he hasn't been 100% healthy all year, I'd imagine. Yep. He's always been looked after at training, and then it's just frustration, just wanting to get it, be 100% and, you know, picking up something else. So we're all thinking of Adam, and he's so important to that team. Before we get into the actual game, there was another period in the game right at the end. There was about 10 minutes to go, or maybe 15, and there was a 10-minute period. The Broncos were in front.
Mm.
They elected to go for goal to take it to 4 points instead of 2 points, which I probably, you know, as a captain, I wouldn't have done that. I would have kept the pressure on the line. Then they get the ball back. They run on last tackle. They're still in front here. They run on the last tackle on halfway. Cheap possession turnover. Give Melbourne a gift field position, and Melbourne go up and score. And then they kick the ball out on the full. That's all Adam's job, right? Adam makes a decision whether to kick for goal or not. Adam puts that ball where the opposition don't want it, which is coming off their try line, and Adam kicks off. That's where they need to – that they miss him, and he's so important for them. They've got outstanding players all over the field, but they need someone to steer that ship, and they need to fix that if he's going to be out for a couple of weeks.
I mean, going back, this is why Souths were worried to give him a contract, that longer term, what he's up. And I know it's digging up this story that's almost probably reciprocal, but that they – and obviously they had Ilias and they got the guy in there today, Hawkins, but they're like – they were wary of the durability of things like Adam Reynolds' hamstring, unfortunately. So life goes on. The question now is for the Bronx guys, they now know what life looks like when he eventually does retire. So do they start planning now, or do they just fill gaps with this squad and worry about that when he actually does pull the pin?
Well, I think they need to start planning now. Like, he's not going to play forever. He's getting older, as Gu said. It happens to all of us, and they need to have someone in there almost now shadowing Adam, right? You're probably not going to get anyone with quite as good as his skill set, because quite honestly, since the very beginning of his career, the way he's kicked the ball and directed his team around the park, he's one of a kind. He's been almost the best kicker in the NRL for the last 15 years. I know Nathan Cleary's come along, and DCE's a great kicker of the ball, but purely on a kicking perspective, putting the ball in the good positions, the positions where the opposition team doesn't want to be, he's been the best for, you know, as long as he's been playing. So you're not going to quite replace that, but they need someone around him now learning from him how to manage a game, the decision-making with the halfback, how to direct the team around the park. And I'd be shocked if they don't have someone in that junior system shadowing him already.
I think, Wado, one of the reasons too, we're seeing guys like Benny Hunt extend, and guys like Daly Cherry-Evans, who don't seem to have sort of the same sort of issues with their body at their later stages as career as Adam does. But I just think there's a lack of really good young halves coming through now, especially on the ball halves, because I think that, you know, guys growing up 10 or 15 years ago came through the schooling system, and back then it was a little bit of a different game where everyone was sort of programmed into playing a certain style, digging into the line, passing out the back, a lot of block shapes, a lot of premeditated stuff, whereas the last couple of years the game's changed again with the rule changes around, you know, the dummy halves and the play the balls. Six agains, where, you know, on the ball halfbacks and really genuine playmakers are now, you know, become really important. And I don't know if we're developing them at the same rate as we're losing them. So having those type of guys coming through your system, you just need to look at some of the guys that have come through and gone through the Penrith system. Look at Sean O'Sullivan, who's gone to the Dolphins, and, you know, we saw what he did at Penrith in that system when, you know, the system was around him. Then you take him out of that system, put him in a side where they don't have the same sort of infrastructure, and he doesn't have the same sort of impact.
Yeah,
so getting these young guys coming through is just, you know, a lot of clubs out there are just searching for these players, and they just don't seem to be coming up with them.
Yeah, I could talk on this for ages, to be honest, because it's this thing that I've seen come across. It's really up to the clubs and the coaches to develop the halves and give them time to come in and be able to be the player to manage the game. Now, you look at this South Sydney situation, right? They didn't trust in Adam Reynolds' body, right? But trust in his brain and his knowledge and his long-term. Imagine having Ilias be his apprentice for 2 years, right?
Mm.
Ilias, you might think he's ready for first grade. You might think he's the man, but he hasn't grown into that yet to be out there week in, week out with the pressure, getting a team around the park. So you just bleed him into first grade. He plays 5 games 1 year. Plays 10 games another year. Adam Reynolds, he comes into this year. Ilias is a 30-40 game player now. Souths get to introduce him now. So you get to eat your cake and have it too, right? You need to preach patience to the young half and show them what happens if you get exposed to the NRL too early and you aren't ready to handle it. Because it's easy when it's going well. Everyone's going to be on your side. Everyone's going to back you. But as soon as you're not going well as a team, you're the first one that the press is going to come on. And Ilias has found out the hard way. He's out here playing New South Wales Cup right now, and he was touted as Adam Reynolds' replacement. Now, he could be at a crossroads if he doesn't fight his way back in. Mm. And I'm not saying that's on him either. Like, I don't think the club gave him enough time to develop with the right people around him. As I was just saying, they should have a young bloke up in Brisbane now shadowing Adam Reynolds around. Because what Adam can't do on the field now or while he's injured and what he can't do in the future years coming, he can impart that at training, be around the club and teach a young guy the maturity and the temperament to play in our game week in, week out and have that responsibility of the team.
You have to remember, though, when South Sydney and Adam Reynolds had that issue around his contract, Adam Reynolds wanted a three-year deal, right? South Sydney were only willing to give him 1 year. They didn't just say, we don't want you at all. They wanted to give him 1 year because of their concerns. This is year three now. This is Adam Reynolds' third year at the Broncos, and this is what they were worried about.
That's the point.
That's right.
Like, Ilias could have been behind him and still played 20 games and been in a much better spot now. If they'd have just had someone in there who could teach him patience, yes, we know you want to play first grade. Okay, you look at Braden Trindle at the Sharks, right? Everyone's known his talent for ages. We know he's ready to play first grade. He's been frustrating for him because he's been stuck behind Matty Moore and Nicho Hynes. Right, but by the time he's had an opportunity to come into first grade, he's not a finished product by far, but his temperament and his understanding of the game is at a much higher level. And now he can go on and have a 10-year career and be at the top and not have to worry about the fluctuations in his game and the inconsistencies because he's not learning it trial by fire. It's up to the clubs and the coaches to really develop, as Ryan said, develop these young guys and don't burn them, mate. Put all the pressure on them and then kick them to the curb when they're not doing their job, because a part of why they're not doing their job is because you didn't do your job.
Well, and that's exactly right, Wade, because there's too much pressure in the game these days to let a guy do his apprenticeship in first grade. It can't happen anymore. There's too much pressure on the players. There's too much pressure on the coach. They need results. So you're exactly right. Guys need to sort of bide their time. And sometimes that's really hard for a coach because he needs results. He's got this young gun coming through that's still learning his trade. Feels like he needs to throw him in because they're getting desperate. And all of a sudden he has a couple of bad games, gets thrown back to the scrap heap, and then can get moved on to another club or whatever. And I look at a guy and you look at, you know, halves at the back end of their career and as opposed to when they first started. And they're chalk and cheese. They've done their time, but it doesn't seem like that process is available for players anymore. Have a look at wouldn't the Gold Coast Titans still love to have Jamal Fogarty? Like, I mean, look at the way that he plays now. Like how he started out up there was sort of basically moved on and gone down to the Raiders. His kicking game and the parts of his defence and how he's developed into like a really mature professional halfback. Most clubs would love a halfback like that, but yeah, no one just is allowed the time in first grade to actually develop into that sort of player. And that's the issue that we find with all of these guys now and all those young guys coming through. Look at young Galvin, you know. He's been amazing in the opening couple of weeks and he's come through and he's been able to have make a real impact for his team and get some results. But, you know, it mightn't always go that well for him. And how patient are they going to be with a guy like that if all of a sudden they lose four or five in a row?
Mm. To defend the clubs a little bit, Gerds and Wade, the growing influence of player managers is causing a lot of this problem, right? Because I know you're saying, oh, yeah, these kids need to be patient. The club needs to do the right thing by these kids and have an apprenticeship in the lower grades. But then you get a situation where you got player agents coming to the club saying, my client's not getting a term, we're going to move him on. And the club will realise that this kid's actually got a lot of talent, he's got a big future. Mm. But if they don't play him, then what happens? And we saw it with Lachie Galvin over the offseason. The Tigers bought Jaden Sullivan, they bought Latu Fainu, then they signed Jerome Luai, Aiden Caesar. And Lachlan Galvin's family and his manager has gone to the club and said, we want out, this kid's path is blocked. Now, I'm not saying Lachie Galvin wasn't ready and every case is different. But the amount of influence that player agents now have and the pressure that puts on the clubs to play people, it's extraordinary. And Blaise Talangi, for example, he's got an option in his favour. The Eels have played him. I'm not saying they're making decisions based on that, but Ethan Sanders is leaving the club. They don't play him. They play Blaise Talangi. There are so many things that happen behind the scenes, and I think the influence of player agents is a big part of it.
Believe it or not. Believe it or not.
You guys hated the quiz, but really loved it deep down. How do you feel about this regular segment? You're okay with it?
Well, Gerge is the most experienced, so I'm going to defer to him.
Mm.
Yeah, I like the theme song, Adam, but then it pretty much ends.
Right, I'll ask you the first question then.
Thank you,
okay,
mate.
The kickoff needs to be changed. What do you reckon?
Into what? Like a tap, like back, like a tap restart?
Maybe come up with an idea if you believe it needs to be
changed.
What is
it going to be changed into?
It just needs to be changed first.
In general.
Yeah.
I think Dean Ritchie wrote an article during the week about
the collisions.
Bulldog's at it again, is he?
The dog. Yes.
Been working hard, has he, Chammy?
Saying that let's try and negate ridiculous collisions in the game. How do you do that? Okay. You take away the power of the kickoff when someone comes off the back fence.
Well, they've already done that for the dropout, essentially, haven't they? Because that was another situation where, you know, they would kick deep and you would have a front rower back there and there would be collisions. So they've lessened the penalty there of a short dropout not coming off. So I think they're doing it in certain ways. That one probably more subtly, but I don't believe it. No.
No?
I think the policy line is that's to create more contest, Gerds, not to take the collision out of the game.
But it has helped.
Well,
that's a byproduct of it. And listen, I don't believe it. I don't want to see it. I think a part of our game, that is a part of our game. You can control the intimidation factor and set the tone of the game with those runs. Like a player who carries and makes a break or does some damage off that kickoff and really boosts his team's spirits. And likewise, a player who makes a real solid tackle, controls that, can set the tone for his defensive team. There is a contest there of wills of who wants to tackle harder or who wants to run harder, particularly at the start of a game.
It can set a tone as well.
It can set the tone for the game for your team. I think, unfortunately, I think we will see it go out of the game eventually just because of the need to, you know, mitigate the big collisions. I don't want to see it. But
like an NFL-style fair catch. Like they wave it off, they catch it and take it out to the 30.
I don't want to see it. Like, I know Gerds would be the same as me. Like when I was taught to play the game as a kid, but my dad taught me how to play. It's, mate, when you go out there and play, you put your body on the line for your teammates. And that's an inherent risk of our game.
Well, just as a fan as well, and I've taken part in the odd one of these as well. Everyone loves, especially after not on the source, a game of Runnymede's. And this is the ultimate game at Runnymede, isn't it?
Has there been a situation lately where this has become sort of more relevant? Like, did we have a head knock out of a
just the collisions, Gerds, with the concussions and everything.
But Preston generally, Adam, it comes after we have a situation in a game where someone comes reeling out. Was the Preston one off a kickoff?
Yeah, it was Paulo and broke his jaw. Mm. So that's where it's come from, the latest round of, I wouldn't say hysteria, but... Focus.
I just wonder how much data, how many of those situations are we finding that are, you know, you talk about mitigating the risk. I mean, what's the percentage of amount of people that are getting concussed off kickoffs? Like, what's the data around that? How can we understand that a little bit more before we start pulling these things out of the game that have been, you know, with us for 100 years?
It might have been a Bulldog story. I just didn't read it.
Next.
I missed it too.
Okay, here's one. The NRL must bring back City Country and an early season rep round. Chammy, you can go first with this one.
I love the idea of it. I just don't know how the players can play any more football than what they are. Waiter, you've been heavily involved with the RLPA. Does this get the tick of approval by anyone to play more footy? I just can't see it happening. I think there are other ways to give back to the country region than bringing this game back.
Yeah, I officially resigned from that role.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, as a player,
You've abandoned the player?
No, I haven't abandoned him. I just wasn't allowed to be a director no more because I don't play no more. I'm not a player, director, am I? I'm an ex-player.
But Clint Newton's an ex-player. He's got a role.
You've got so much to give.
My phone's always on for them. I love the players. You just heard how venomously I defended the players just then. I'll always be in the players' corner. But I think, listen, I love my experiences in City Country, but the workload on the players now is higher than ever. The amount of games being played, I'd love the test match sort of idea. I feel like we need to grow international footy
back to an Anzac route.
Even if that is adding load to the players and extra games, but the City Country, I just think as a young player, it was the best ever. Right, you get to go and it's sort of that tier under Origin. It's a step in the right direction, but as an older player, it's just like you better you look at Adam Reynolds. If he gets picked, he goes no. Even if he wasn't injured, mate, I need to pull back and rest my body. That's more important to me than playing.
I know we can't play any more games, but you know what I'd love to see? Sydney versus Western Sydney. Be a great game.
Always from on where you were born.
You're going to watch that tonight. Seagulls versus Panthers out of Four Points Park. Mate, there you go.
Seagulls versus Panthers. Half the Seagulls are from Western Sydney. What are you talking about?
No,
they're on the bus from Westfield Sports.
And the coach
the
of the Panthers lives on Collaroy Beach.
Exactly.
I know Queensland had that run of dominance, but, mate, I think Western Sydney might have a longer run of dominance.
Yeah, correct.
but wait, oh, it used to be genuine. City Country used to have a purpose. It used to be like a genuine selection for Origin. It used to be played at the appropriate time. And as you spoke about Adam Reynolds as an example, I don't think it's about the players. I think it's about the clubs now. If they don't take the concept seriously, it doesn't work. And that's why AFL don't have a state of Origin, because all the clubs continually, you know, they pull out their valuable players out. So the concept doesn't work. And I think that's what you'd happen. It hasn't started happening yet with Origin, and hopefully it doesn't. But with lesser games like City Country, clubs just won't have a bar of that.
So we've got two don't believe it's. What about this one, gents? This is a good one. The Tigers are closer to a premiership than Parramatta. You believe that? Or do you not believe that?
Soprano, that's our producer, Adam. He's a mad Parramatta fan, and every now and again he just throws in like a question that he really wants to hear the answer to.
Yeah,
and this is
what
one
are you
of
gonna
those.
Give him?
No, I don't believe it. I think Parramatta, if they've got their best side on the field this year, have already shown that they can compete with those top sides, and I think they've got the experience, which is key, to go on and do some damage in the finals. So I don't believe it. No.
Yeah, Wade.
Yeah, I don't believe it. I think Parramatta have still got a bit of Tigers measure. They're definitely on the up, and they've been improving the Tigers. But yeah, I feel like Parra have a more deeper and balanced team and more experience.
Okay, producer Anthony is happy to keep you two around. What about you, Chammy? Which way are you going to go?
Well, technically, the Tigers are closer, because if you go back, 2005 is closer than 1986, so technically the Tigers are closer.
Everything's closer than 1986.
What sort of answer is that, Chammy? Get Reedy back on, for God's sake. What's that?
I think the Tigers are building to be. I think a lot has been made of the Tigers and this overnight success. This is not an overnight success, their last couple of games. They've been building for the last few years in their development programs. A lot of these kids coming through are because of that. And I think they've finally got the structure in place to make the most of what they've got out west. But unfortunately, right now, who's close to winning a comp? It's Parramatta.
Thank you for eventually getting the answer. We're back in a sec. You're with the Saturday Scrum. Gents, you mentioned Brent Reed in the last segment. Reedy was out the front with his Bob the Builder T-shirt on, saying, knock this joint down. He had a big sign in front of him. So he's over this joint. He'll go to Leichhardt tomorrow. He'll do the same over there. But in all seriousness, about the Tigers, we'll get to them in a moment in terms of the halves situation and the bottleneck that they've got for a lot of their players that they've got on their roster or about to have on their roster. But, Chammy, could this joint end up, is this the favourite option, you think, for Shane Richardson, this ground, a core stadium for the Tigers, play the home game?
Yeah, I think so. I think I don't think the fans will agree with it, but I think Shane Richardson believes that this is their future. Leichhardt Oval and Campbelltown have a place, but that's not their future. They've put out a strategic plan to work out where they're going to go going forward, but I think this is the preference.
On the field, Gerds. So Jerome Luai bought as the number 7. That was the dream for Jerome. That's what got him away from Penrith in the end, and a bit of moolah. But Lachie Galvin, Aiden Caesar, Jaden Sullivan, Adam Dewey, Latu Fainu, who makes his debut, we're led to believe, this weekend. How does that all work out over 6, 7 and maybe 13?
Yeah, well, they've won 2 games, Adam, and I think, you know, we don't want to get too carried away with some of the depth or talent in their squad, because we really haven't seen it yet. We know that Galvin's come on and done a great job in the opening couple of games, and Sullivan, he gets his opportunity to show us what he can do today. I think he's the kind of player, though, at some point that's probably going to, not sure whether I see him as being a starting half. I kind of see him as a guy that might develop a little bit later. He needs to spend a little bit of time maybe in the lower grades developing parts of his game, and then could come on maybe as a 14 where he could play in the halves or at dummy half. And, yeah, Jerome's interesting. He did really well without Nathan last week. He's a different style of player. He's certainly going to come over there and have an impact on that Tiger side. And Aiden Caesar's doing a fantastic job this year, but I'm not sure what his contract looks like. But you generally need like 3 top line halves these days if you want to play finals football. You just need those guys to be making sure that they're at a consistent level. Their best and worst aren't too far apart. And you need 3 of them. And look what's going on with the Knights at the moment. It's great to have healthy competition in those spots, but then, you know, Chammy will say, managers get upset. Well, then that's about the manager the management of the players, and it's about the relationship that Benji and the club have with those guys. And hopefully they've all got an appetite to play for the Tigers. They want the best for the club. We know Jerome's going to have one spot, and it's going to be a bit of a battle for the other. But, you know, Galvin's only 18. So he's got a lot of football in front of him, a lot of development to do. And Sullivan, I think, we'll see a little bit more of today. But and I don't know the young kid from Manly. What's his name again?
Latu Fainu. So he had a massive boom on him through his junior years in high school. He went to high school in Narrabeen. He's got his brothers who have obviously played NRL before, but he's yet to take that next step.
Yeah, well, you speak to Wado, and he spoke to you just before about the young guy that is coming through the Sharkies system and, you know, took his time and waited 3 or 4 years. Like, you're going to have two 18-year-olds pushing for a spot, and I don't think that's a bad thing, Wade.
No, definitely. And I think a lot of those questions, you know, may be answered by the time this season's ended. And not answered completely and forever, but at least to see what the start of next year looks like too. There's a lot of footy to be played, a lot of water to go under this bridge.
Totally.
As Gerd said, they're only 18. So I can tell you, I debuted as a 17-year-old, did my MCO in the last game of the season. Well, not the last game of the season, but that was the end of my season, back into the year. And then the next year I played 22 of the 24 games, and by the end of that season I was broken. My body was broken. I had to get shoulder surgery.
Because you weren't quite ready
The rigors of NRL. And it's not to say it's just because I was too young, but I just wasn't, like, it just took its toll that year.
Your body, yeah.
So having a couple of options where they can maybe just see how the bloke's going, monitor them, keep developing, because they're just at the start, the Tigers, of their journey. They're heading in the right direction. They've got time on their side. It's not really where they are, these 18-year-old, 19-year-olds, are in the next season, even next two seasons. They want to be at the top of their tree in maybe 3 or 4 and then hopefully keep those guys around for 10 years.
Are they comfortable about all this, Chammy?
Yeah,
about
for now.
Having this, like, glut of halves?
Yeah, of course. I spoke to Shane Richardson about it on the weekend. He actually said, I'd rather be in our position than some other clubs who haven't got a spine in place. But let me paint you a picture, to use a Wade Graham expression. The Tigers have got 6 halves, right, going forward. You've got to consider Adam Dewey comes back from an ACL injury midway through the year, and they'll get Luai next year. Lockie Galvin's on a minimum wage contract. Goes up to $250 next year, $350 the following year. Latu Fainu is on $450 this year. That goes up towards $600 in the final couple of years. He's there for 4 years. There's a lot of money in these young halves. Jaden Sullivan, he's got a long-term deal as well. He finishes on $600,000. We know Jerome Luai's deal is in excess of $1.2 million a season. The next 8 to 12 weeks, they're going to have a decision to make. From what I gather, Jaden Sullivan will probably be the one that they're going to look to offload. They're giving him a go on today. He'll play in the halves.
But how? Who's going to take him on 600?
No one at that price. This is going to be the hard part for the Tigers, but at least they're in a position with some of the other kids, like Lockie Galvin and Latu Fainu. They're getting value for money.
Yeah,
if Galvin's on $250 next year and they're paying Jaden Sullivan an exorbitant amount to not play, it levels itself out a little bit. But the decision's going to be made in the next 12 weeks based on how these young kids play.
Geez, you'd make a good cap manager for a club one day, Chammy, if it doesn't work out for you in journalism. If you run out of words to use,
well,
you'd go down this path.
He could perform for the opening of the next...
2032, he'd be up staying at Gerd's house and then running out with flags.
I think it was the Paralympics, though, wasn't it?
He wants to do both next time. He's going to do both. Yeah, that's his aim. He's going over to Paris to do the same as well.
I'm going to Paris, actually.
Yeah, I bet you are. Adam Peacock in for Tony Squires, who is not in the country. So there you go. That's why it was a bit difficult for him to do the show this afternoon. Michael Chamis and Wade Graham here. Gerds will be back in a minute. But around the grounds, guys. So, Chammy, run us through this one. Michael Maguire, your mate, is taking the Blues out of Coogee and going to camp in the Blue Mountains. Now, not actually camp.
Camping. It would be great camping.
Glamping, maybe. No, they're actually going to a proper hotel, and there's a good setup up there. And back in the day, Laurie Daly actually looked at this facility and thought, it's not quite what we need just yet, but it's around the mark of what we need. So no Kingscliff, no Coogee, Blue Mountains. Thoughts on this?
Well, Michael Maguire realising what most good people reason, West is best. He's heading out to the Blue Mountains, taking them away from Coogee. Look, he wants to have his own flavour, and I get that. I think he wants, and knowing Michael Maguire and the kind of coach he is, he wants to bunker down, no distractions. This is all about footy. I don't care about your free time. Your free time spent thinking about the game. And that suits Michael Maguire to a T. Like, we know what he's like. He's an intense character, and these Origin camps are going to be pretty much that. Are you surprised, Wado, that someone like Michael Maguire would want to go somewhere isolated and get the players together and get that feeling of real togetherness that they didn't really – well, not they didn't have it in Coogee, but they had a lot more distractions there.
No, let's be realistic. It's not as if it's out of – in the middle of nowhere. It's just the Blue Mountains. And, like, you're still going to have days off. The boys are going to have their cars. They still drive down the highway to Penrith and Parramatta if they want. I like it. Madge is taking control of it. It's obviously a good facility. They used to have good footy fields out there at Warramoo Oval, Lower Blue Mountains. Played plenty of finals out there when I was playing at Blacktown. I don't know if it's still there, that field. Is it?
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah, yeah, it's
the
still
four
there.
Fields, the top two down the bottom?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, that's
it. What side of the river are you on, by the way?
On the east side.
Oh, you're east side.
East side of the
yeah,
river.
Fair enough. No, it's a beautiful place.
But one thing Michael Maguire didn't think through, boys, by taking him out there, do you know what he's done?
What?
He's guaranteed about 30 journos booking hotels in the Blue Mountains to cover the fortnight or the week in camp.
I will say one thing. It'll start being cold that time of year, and it does get cold in the Blue Mountains.
Frosty.
So hopefully the hotels have the nice fires. They still have it out there. And
yeah,
marshmallows.
Definitely. No horse riding, though. Last time New South Wales went out that way.
That's true.
Wayne Pearce.
There's everything out there in Penrith now, but there's the hotels.
Everything. The golf course. Oh, you would know. That's right.
There's the golf course. I walked out on them.
On us. You did.
No, they punted me, mate. I didn't have
he walked out on the Westies. You could have still driven out to Cronulla and from the West and played there.
He took one look at Northies and that was enough, correct?
That was enough.
Hey, Daly Cherry Evans to become the most capped Seagull of all time this afternoon at Four Pines, taking on Penrith. They'll need their best to beat Penrith this afternoon. But where does DCE rank among the Manly greats? Is he the best ever? I can chime with an opinion on this one. But firstly, you, Wado, when you look at Manly from a step back, who do you think of first as their greatest?
As their greatest? Well, I think of Cliffy, Menzies, Tuvey. They're the names that come to mind straight away. Bobby Fulton. And, you know, you probably... We won't appreciate how much DCE has done for that club and where he ranks until he actually finishes. He's still a little bit of water to go. I think he's in the position where that Manly team, if they're not competing for a premiership this year, they're definitely going to be close next year and the year after. And he's playing some of the best for his career. So I could see him with where that squad's at, just sort of maybe picking off an extra year at a time. And if possible, if he gets to a grand final and they can win it, maybe see his way out that way. I think if he could put his dream finish up there, that's what it would be. And their team is in a position where it could actually happen. So
yeah,
I don't know if we can compare him until he's actually finished, but for sure Cherry Evans' name is going to be up there with the likes of all those, you know, older greats and even the modern greats.
Well, you're the Manly fan.
The Lions,
well,
he's Stewart brothers.
I reckon he's emerged in the last couple of years given his consistency. And he was by far and away Manly's best player last year. In a horribly beaten team some weeks, that, yeah, he's broken into the top five. I got Beaver on top because it's just
Beaver.
Because his longevity, how it finished here in this grand final in 2008. He won a couple of comps, should have won a couple more given what happened in 97. But, yeah, I've got Beaver just in front. Cliffy as well.
Bobby Fulton.
But I'm talking players that I saw with my own eyes. That's how I like to judge him. Like, you could throw in Graham Eady, Max Krillich, a number of guys through the 70s as well. But, I don't quite have DCE yet, but what I will say, Chammy, it's been a remarkable turnaround for his standing in the game, given it was verging on 10 years ago now, the backflip with Gold Coast.
But even before
remember
that.
The Courier Mail?
Yeah.
Back page?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden now he's king in Queensland again around Origin time. It's just been incredible how he's been able to turn that narrative around.
Well, it's not just the narrative in rugby league, the narrative in Manly as well. When you consider they were out to get him, like he didn't have a lot of friends at Manly with the Stewart brothers and the drama that unfolded with Anthony Watmo at the time. You remember back then when he wasn't Mr. Popular at Manly?
That generation of players was kind of not on the, going out or towards the back end of the career, and Daly was emerging and they were throwing everything at him to
try. Well, I felt like he needed to bide his time. And
well, his resilience is probably underrated, right? Because he's gone through not only those issues too. He was still out of that Queensland side for a long time as well, and he's fought his way back there and to represent his country. So his career's had many ups and downs, and resilience, well, to play 300 games, you need to have that in you anyway, but it's probably underrated, that aspect of his game.
for King G. You wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Bulldogs had a reunion before last night's game, or in the lead up to last night's game, which was played against the Roosters back in 2004. They got it done in the grand final against the Roosters, 16-13. Willie Mason, Clive Churchill medalists, and Gerds and Wade, reunion stories. Gerds, you had one, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of years ago for your 20 years with the Penny Panthers.
Yeah, we had 20 years. We had a 10-year one as well. So, yeah, when we played the Roosters, or the Panthers played the Roosters, last year. So we all, I was working, but we all essentially got together, went out there, and, they did the same thing, went into the sheds with the boys after the game. I saw the boys got a little bit rowdy, led by our old skipper, Craig Gower, surprisingly.
That's sure.
And, yeah, they had a good win last year, and you could see that, you know, the boys took a lot from that. I don't think it was just at the game yesterday. From what I can gather, the Bulldogs had something through the week where the players actually, which kind of makes sense, they got to sit down and actually have a bit of a chat with the players that were part of that 2004 side. And you know, I gather they got a fair bit out of that. I think it's great for clubs to recognise those moments. And it looked like they, you know, that really had an impact on their performance yesterday.
What was better for you, Gerds, the 10-year or the 20-year? Like, which one did you kind of enjoy more in a social aspect?
I think the 10-year one, we were all a bit younger and had a little bit more enthusiasm. So it was a little later and a little bit more erratic. Last year's one was a lot calmer. Like, most guys are now, like, late 40s. So, the 10-year one was, it felt like actually a continuation from the grand final celebration itself, to be honest.
What was Craig Gower in a basketball uniform with a clock around his neck and just,
you
slurring.
Remember that, do you?
I remember it clearly. Clearly. Yeah, I think it was there.
I don't think
day.
He's taken that clock off, to be honest.
Wait, so you haven't had a reunion yet, but the good thing is that you're about to.
It's upcoming,
2026 will be, and it looks like with the glint in your eye that you're counting the hours.
Well, when Gerd just said it was like a carry-on from after winning the grand final, I just got a little bit excited because I remember how much fun we had after that premiership. And, yeah, we're looking forward. I remember something that stands out clear to me in that year, I don't know whether it was a training session or whatnot, we probably weren't going as well as we should have been, and, you know, at the end of training, Mickey Ennis, he's a serious character on the field. He sort of pulled us all in, and he wasn't happy with where our attitude was in that training session. And he sort of pulled us in the line and said, "Come on, boys, like, just think how much would you be willing to give and sacrifice just to make sure we lay it all on the line here." And, you know, we come up in this Leeds club right next to us where we train and celebrate in 10 years' time after we win a grand final. And, you know, that sort of stuff.
Will it be ready, though, in 2026?
Well, hopefully. I'll have to have a call to Dino and Steve Mace, our chairman, after this to make sure it is ready because
it's big, though. It's
massive. Well, it's massive for us, particularly being the first ever premiership at the club. And just to catch up with all those guys, there's a special bond you create with people when you go through something like that, and it's always good. A lot of our guys are still playing. Jack Bird's still playing. Val's still playing. Chaddy's still playing, so they won't be able to attend. But the majority of us are all finished up now. So, yeah, something to look forward to, and I'm guessing it'll be quite vigorous as well.
Mm. You play with so many different guys, especially over a long period of time, and you have a sort of a bit of a relationship with most people. But Wade, I just mentioned then, you know, you just have this unmistakable bond with people that you go through on that journey with to win a premiership. And I think it's really important, and it sort of comes through in your relationship. So to have those Bulldogs players, or to have any sort of, you know, current team sit down with players that have actually had that much success at that level and see the connection they have, it's something that I'd imagine they would admire, and they would actually be motivated to put themselves in a situation to be, you know, have those relationships and have that sort of success at that level, Wado, because when you see those boys that you won a premiership with, there's just this certain look, isn't there? There's this certain feeling that just happens.
Yeah, it's to try and describe it. It's like everyone has those friends that you may lose contact with or not see for an extended period of time, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. But then as soon as you see them, it's like you just pick up from where the old times left. That's how I describe when I see anyone from that premiership team. You know, we may not have even sent a message to each other in over a year, but I see him in the mall, catch up. You have that look in the eye, the little smile, the little nod that you know what you were able to achieve together, and yeah, it's something that's pretty special.
See, that's the problem with winning FIFA championships. The reunions are pretty lonely.
Kalyn Ponga joining us on the line right now after the Newcastle Knights win over the Dragons in biblically bad conditions last night in Newey. Kalyn, congratulations on the win. Pretty satisfying when you've got to get through adversity like those conditions threw up. Have you dried out, and can you think of a time when you played in anything like that? That was incredible.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. It's sunny here in Newcastle today, so it's funny how it's funny how that happens. I don't think I've played in conditions quite like that. Maybe when I was younger in New Zealand, but definitely not in like my NRL career.
What got it done for you guys? And equally, how much satisfaction do you get off on the fact that Adam O'Brien mentioned it after the match, that quick turnaround, 4 days to prepare for that one against a team that was trying to set a standard defensively especially?
Yeah. I mean, I think the satisfying thing is we stuck to our game plan, and in those conditions, it's harder to do that. But we were disciplined. We were disciplined to each other, disciplined to the game plan, and in the end, that ended up, you know, getting the job done. The 4 day turnaround and whatnot. Obviously, you don't really talk about it leading into the game because it's not something you want to have, I guess, front and center. But now that we've been through that 4 days, it's nice to have the 6 day turnaround leading into the Roosters.
Kalyn, it's been an indifferent start to the season for your gang. 2-3 now. What is it that you're probably happy with at the start of the season for the Knights? What are you doing well? What do you know consistently you're going to do every week? And what are the areas you think you need to work on?
Yeah, I think apart from our first game, I'm hoping people are watching us and saying that we're a pretty gritty, tough team. Obviously, our first performance against Raiders, I don't think we went out there with the right mindset. But since then, I think our performances have shown that, and I think that will hold you in good stead in the back half of the year, or, you know, for these next handful of games. You know, the polish, and there's been a bit of chat about our attack. That'll come. But, you know, as long as the intent and the effort's there, you know, those things will come. But hopefully that. I hope that people are watching us and saying that we're a gritty team. I know that's what we're trying to pride ourselves on, and especially when we're at home, we want that sort of our fans to see that.
Hey, Kalyn, Wade Graham here, mate. Now, last night you retained the Alex McKinnon Cup. Obviously, a really important member of your club. What's it mean to the players to have a trophy like that and to play for Alex?
Yeah, we definitely spoke about it during the week. He's a huge part of both clubs, but definitely Newcastle, having played majority of his games at Newcastle. And just we sort of built the week around him and around going and getting that cup for him. You know, as he was saying that he wants the cup here. I'm not sure if that's true, but it definitely, that's what we got told, and so we went out there and fought for it. But yeah, he's huge. He's inspirational. His story and what he's done for the club. He's a big part of this city and this club.
AKP, Michael Chambers here, mate. We got a WhatsApp group here on the Saturday scrum, and Brent Reed sent a message when he found out you were coming on saying, "My man, Kalyn, I love that guy." I just wanted to know if the feeling was mutual, mate. Like, you know, you deal a lot with us journos throughout the week, throughout the years. I just want to know where Brent Reed sits on your list of journos.
I love all journos.
good answer.
Fake news, that.
Yeah, I love journos. They're awesome. Brent Reed's always he's always covered like a few stories for us. But mate, all journos are great people.
Yeah. So. Until they're not. Hey, Kalyn, got here from your man Frankie Barrett up there that you recently shot an ad with Nick Kyrgios. Hopefully, he's not leading us up a garden path here. What's the go there?
It was a gaming app. So the app's called Matchmasters. So it was him, it was Nick Kyrgios and Bailey Smith, the AFL player. It was pretty cool. Yep. It was about half a day, a full day of obviously filming for this game. But in amongst that, I obviously got to pick his brain a little bit, talk to him. He's actually a really cool guy. We still talk now, which is pretty surreal for me. Like, he still messages me and says good luck and whatnot. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, he is obviously you see what sort of character he is on the court. You probably assume things for like in terms of how he'd be off the court, but he was actually such a nice bloke. So that was pretty cool. And then Bailey Smith, it was cool to butt heads with him as well.
Hey, Carlin, give us a bit of an idea of what you get up to now. You played on a Friday night. You got the weekend off up there in the Steel City. Do you get out? Do you watch some of the other footy games? Do you spend time with friends? I mean, what's it look like for you over the next couple of days while you're not sort of, you know, directly involved in a game?
I'll definitely get out. I mean, the sun's out. The sun's out after 2 days of rain, so everyone's out and about at the moment. But I guess for me, days off, it's probably like I see friends, hang out with my dog, and then when I get time, just try and find something creative to do that sort of resets my mind as well. But I mean, on short turnarounds, like 5 days, 6 days, it's all about recovery and just getting your mind and body right for training and preparing to go again.
Well, speaking of Frankie Barrett, I know he loves his golf, and we know quietly, you're a good golfer. Did you get out there and take his cash at all, Caelan, or what?
I don't know. I think I have taken Frankie's cash, but I haven't been playing too much, to be honest. In the preseason, I was playing a little bit, but since the season's rolled around, just with our turnarounds and whatnot, I've just been sort of chilling. But I'll definitely get back into it. I don't want to get too like I don't want to let it get too far away from me, because once it's gone, it's too hard to pick back up.
Mate, how are you finding the captaincy? I mean, you're a couple of years in now. Obviously, it was sort of thrown at you a couple of seasons back, but you develop. Is it a role that you're kind of enjoying, that sort of leadership up there with those young guys, or is it something that sometimes you think it's overwhelming, it's too much? How do you take that role?
I think my first year, I definitely thought it was. I didn't think it was. I felt like it was too much. But thrown into it, I was 24. I think we won 8 games that year. We were pretty bad. And I just felt like I had to do everything, or I was responsible for everything, or every loss was on my shoulders. But I've definitely learned that that's not the case. I've got a group around me now. I've got a leadership group, you know, Tyson Frizzell, Adam Elliott, the Saffs, Gags, like those sort of brails, those sort of boys that share the load a little bit, I guess. I can lean on them. Tyson Frizzell, for me, to be honest, is such a important part of this club, and definitely important for me. He helps me so much. But, yeah, just learning that it's not all on me. You know, I've got my strengths, I've got my weaknesses, and so do the other boys, and we sort of share that amongst the group. Just being myself, that's the important thing, is not trying to be someone else or change who I am. Just keep being myself.
Are your goal kicking's going all right, Caelan? So noticed last night when you're taking it, you're 16 of 16, you're working with Darryl Halligan, who arguably the greatest goal kicker of all time in rugby league. You have this routine, and you were like squaring your shoulders up. It was like a little Pilates warm-up move or something like that. And it's all very process-driven, and it's, I don't know if you like this over a golf ball before you whack one 300, but talk us through that and what you've learnt and what you're trying to do there with the old square-up.
The shoulders.
Yeah.
To be honest, the shoulders thing, I don't know if it actually does anything.
just a waggle. Just say it's just a waggle. It's a waggle for you. Yeah.
It's like a golf. It's like a. It is like a golf process, I guess. I've just always. I've done it for the last 3 years or so, and I feel like it works. So again, sticking to the process and not changing. It's just what I do. But Darryl's helped me in terms of. He changed my kicking tee, so I kick off a lower tee now. And just my confidence, I guess. It gives me little tips along the way, and I don't know, I guess just having his voice makes me confident.
Well, my young bloke actually does the waggle in the backyard following you, so you must be doing something right, mate.
Yeah, there you go. Caelan, he also plays ice hockey, so I don't know what that means, but I'm going to steer clear of Wade Graham's children by the sounds of it, because they like, just getting involved. I just like getting involved. So, Caelan Ponga, thanks so much for joining us, mate, on a beautiful day up there in Newcastle. Unlike last night, you got 2 points, and that's the main thing. Appreciate it, mate, and good luck in the next couple of weeks.
Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, buddy.
You too. Lachlan Ilias, by the way, guys, has ended the game almost in tears because he was taken out late in that one, Michael Chamis. It all kicked off. South won New South Wales Cup, 26-20. Warriors player got sent off, attacking the legs of Lachlan Ilias late on. He's not in a good way.
No. Well, I noticed that as we were talking to Caelan Ponga, the tackle on Lachlan Ilias late in the game, they were up 26-20. He's trying to kick the ball downfield to the other side to keep the ball away from their own try line, and it was a horrific tackle from the Warriors player. I wasn't sure who it was, but it doesn't look good. Lachlan Ilias is in a lot of discomfort. I'm watching him now on the sideline. He's just trying to put weight on that leg there. He's on crutches, boys. I'm just looking at him now. He's on crutches. So that's not good for Lachlan Ilias. He's been through a tough few weeks. He's been playing well in the lower grades, and now looks like he's going to spend a long time on the sidelines with what was an ugly, ugly incident.
Yeah, it was Freddie Lussick, actually, and he got sent. And, we saw Lachlan come off, and he could bear a tiny bit of weight on it. Now he's got the weight off. Look, if it was horrific, if it was snapped bone, he'd be in the sheds already, correct?
Yeah, where he's feeling it, it's up high on that ankle, so you don't want to preempt any injuries, but that's normally around the syndesmosis area. But he's on the crutches now, heading into the sheds. He'll probably get straight into a moon boot, I'd imagine, and straight up for some scans. So Chamis will have that.
Interesting.
He'll be all over that.
We're interested to see Jason Demetriou's come out. He's walking up the tunnel with Lachlan Ilias. He's talking to him right now. The South Sydney guys were inside at the time. They must have heard about what had happened and came out to check on Lachlan Ilias. A lot of the first graders are out here as well, just making sure that he's all right. So fingers crossed it's good news for Lachlan Ilias and not too bad.
We spoke about the Brisbane Broncos before, guys, but Tyron Wishart has joined us now on the Saturday scrum to talk about Storm Boys are going okay down there. Tyron, thanks for joining us, mate. Crazy game of footy on Thursday night. So what was the immediate reception from Craig Bellamy? Happy you won or unhappy with the amount of points conceded?
Yeah. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It was a bit of a weird one. I think he said in the post-match interview it was probably one of the weirdest games he's coached, which is probably fair. It was, I felt like we were controlling the game at times, and then obviously they have some great individual players who can strike from anywhere and sort of, score some tries from some areas that wasn't too good for us, which was a bit hard at times, but we're able to stay in the fight and, eventually get the win.
Mate, Wade Graham here. It was the return of Cameron Munster and that mysterious groin injury, but I feel like it was his halves partner that stole the show, Jerome Hughes. I said on the call, we all know how much of a talent he is and how good he is, but I still feel like he's underrated in the NRL as a halfback.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's, the presence that he has at the Storm is unreal. He's a good leader, and his experience as well. You know, he's covered a few positions in his time, so he understands the game really well. And we missed him 2 weeks ago against the Knights, so it was great to have him back. And yeah, he's in unreal form, which has been good for us.
Hey, Tyron, Ryan Girdler here, mate. I played a little bit with the old man. You might have seen highlights of him putting him in for tries on the wing down there back in the late 90s. But, hey, buddy, I just want to have a quick chat about your back rowers. Alyssa Katoa, big fella, came down a couple of years ago from the Warriors. It was always going to be a bit of a project for bellyache, but I tell you what, gee, at the moment you're getting some benefits from some of the work that's been put into him. He's been outstanding this year.
Yeah, no, he has, and I have seen plenty of highlights, and I think you pretty much made his career, I think, early days. So.
Oh, I think Rodwell's got to take a bit of credit as well, but,
that's good. Ellie's an unreal player. He pretty much came into the club full guns blazing last year. He's the same, his presence is huge, and he does a lot of hard work in the backfield and things that people don't really see as well. So, he's skillful. Like the amount of skill that he has is outstanding for a back rower, and he's been huge for us. And hopefully we can keep getting him in the game like he is. A few more doubles would be pretty good for us.
Hey, Tyron, Michael Chamis here, mate. A lot of talk at the moment about Big Nelson and where he fits in at the club. I just wanted from your point of view as one of the players, how's Nelson going, and are there any signs that he's not quite fitting in at the moment? I know it's I know it's only early, and he's coming back from an injury. How is he fitting at the moment?
Yeah, no, not at all. He's fitting in well. I think you know, there's a lot of outside noise, but he just had a few injuries over pre-season, so didn't get to train as much as he'd like. So he's back now, and obviously he's had a couple games in Cup, or he's playing his second game in Queensland Cup, I think, this week. So he's just getting a bit of game fitness, and I'm sure he'll be back out there soon. He's been working his ass off, which is good to see. And yeah, I think once he's back running with us, the better. We obviously all know what he can do, and he's a big body, which is good to play alongside.
Hey, Tyron, I just want to bring up an incident that happened in the game the other night, and I've got written in front of me Munster strip, which could mean anything in a general sense, but in the actual act of playing footy. So this one where he got his try disallowed, it was just brilliant thinking. He didn't touch the player who was prone on the ground, just nicked the ball, dived over, try, no try, because the player is deemed dead once you touch them. So on regardless of how voluntary the tackle is, how do you guys feel about this rule as it's interpreted at the moment?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. There's a few rule changes that have come in this year. Obviously, there's the leg lift and you know, the red zone kick, which has been a big one. That's changed the way people play. But yeah, that's obviously another one. I think that's just the way the game is at the moment. There's plenty of rule changes. They're changing it, I guess, to make the game better. And that one's a bit of a strange one, but you can't do anything. You got to play to the rules. And unfortunately, it wasn't in our favour this time. But yeah, you can't do too much, I guess.
Mm. No.
Well, your role down there, Tyron, I mean, you're playing in the halves, you've played in the outside back. I think did you play in the finals on the wing or something a few years back? I mean, you've played some big games in some different positions. Now, bellyache's usually in the middle. I mean, how hard is it for you to just prepare, really not knowing how you're going to be used on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I have covered a fair few positions, but I think over the last 2 years, I've sort of found ways to better prepare. It was a bit tough at the start, but...
Are you a dummy half? Did you come through the system as a dummy half?
Yeah, so halves and hooker, I came through sort of playing 18s and then 20s and then through to now. But there's been situations at different times where I've had to play different positions in the outside backs, and I've played a little bit of lock as well when I was growing up. So it's not foreign to me. I enjoy playing different positions. But, yeah, like you said, the preparation can be a bit weird sometimes, but I guess that's my role at the club at the moment. So I just got to prepare the best I can for anything to happen.
A quick one on what we've experienced up here in New South Wales, mate. Have you been in contact with home? I'm thinking that you have relatives on the south coast down there. Everything okay down there, seeing we absolutely copped it from the heavens over the last 2 years?
Yeah, no, I've got one of my cousins. He lives on a property down at Berry on the south coast, and their properties just got hammered. Their cars are all flooded in, and hopefully things get better. But praying for everyone back home. Obviously, it's some people would be in worse situations, but absolutely copped it. Hopefully, it stopped. I don't know what it's like now.
No, we can't see a cloud, mate. It's 26 degrees, yeah. So it's ridiculous at the moment. So,
hey,
Melbourne weather up there.
How was that transition for you? Like, you grew up in Gerringong, yeah?
Yeah, grew up in Gerringong.
How was that transition moving down to Melbourne and going through that process? Or did you spend some time up in Brisbane first at the feeder clubs? I mean, how did that sort of whole, what system did you come through? How did that all work out?
Yeah, it was. So I grew up playing with the obviously just at home for the Gerringong Lions, and then played all my sort of junior reps through the Steelers in SG Ball, and then with the Dragons through under 20s, and had a a year of New South Wales Cup, but then COVID hit, so that was 2020. So I didn't end up playing too many games. I think we played one game, and then the comp got cancelled. But yeah, 2021, I signed with the Storm mid year, and it came out of the blue, to be honest. I wasn't really expecting it. I had no other clubs chasing me, so as soon as I heard that they called, I jumped on it. And yeah, obviously, anyone that's been to Gerringong, it's a very small coastal town, and bit of a different move moving into the city at Melbourne. But I've loved it. Yeah, change of scenery. I was I think 2021 when I moved, so I was definitely keen for a change. And yeah, it's been a blast. I've loved it.
Yeah, he's now living down in Melbourne, sipping lattes for fun, going to art galleries, wearing Crocs with long linen pants and things like that. Yeah. It's very, very trendy down there. But Tyrone, we'll leave it there, mate.
I've never heard of before, but I'm slowly learning.
Get yourself a magic or whatever the bloody hell that is. I thought that was something in an establishment of another kind. But anyway, mate, leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. And, yeah, good luck in the next couple of weeks.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
See you, buddy.
Tyrone Richard joining us on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M Footy lives on Listener, thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water.